Steven, how's things going on your end in real estate? What's happening new in your real estate for you?
Yeah, well, you know, and I'm in the Bay Area. I'm in Oakland, California. And right. It's a very, very interesting time, man. I mean, I think, first of all, you know, obviously we're in a high interest rate environment compared to where we have been over the last few years, right? Historically, still, you know, still kind of low. But where we have been, I think, is what has caused, in my world, the, you know, the stagnation or the slowdown of transactions, which is creating a bunch of opportunities for investors to purchase properties at better price points. And I think, you know, in the Bay Area, our average cap rates, right, are below the average interest rates, right? And so that causes a problem for people who are wanting to buy properties where, hey, wait a minute, you know, my rate's going to be higher than the rate of return on the building, right?
Right.
And so, look, I mean, you know, really the only way you can do that is if you're paying cash for a property or you're willing to, you know, deal with negative leverage, meaning that the banks, you're not making money on the bank's money. You're losing money on the bank's money. That's negative leverage, right? And so if you're willing to do that for a period of time, you can get a loan and do that. But other than that, transactions have came way down. So now that requires sellers, right, to meet the market. If they want to sell the property, it's going to be at a price point or terms to where a buyer can acquire the property and it makes sense. And meaning that it makes sense where you have positive leverage or there's positive cash flow. It's not like it was a year and a half ago where, man, you just listed a property and you got ridiculous, right? Ridiculous amounts of buy offers above asking price. Nobody really cared about the returns on the property. People just would buy it, right? And that's when there's 2% money out there, you know, that's what you see. So that has changed from, you know, which last quarter made it tough in terms of the amount of transactions. What we've seen this quarter so far, though, is an increase in investors looking at deals, making offers, all right, working deals, and then in our shop, closing deals, right? And I think that, you know, investors are feeling better about where we are in the sense of, hey, look, you know, this is where we are. Maybe the world's not going to fall off a cliff.
Right.
But on the flip side of that, sellers are beginning to be a little bit more reasonable. Not all the way, but they're beginning to be more reasonable. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean. Something tells me that half the time, sellers aren't always reasonable in general. Like, it seems to be something that just kind of happens where some of the brokers that I talk to and some of the agents that I've spoken to, they'll have these the sellers with these radically drastic numbers, and you as a, you know, broker or agent is like, come on, man, like, that's not going to work. But you do it. Some of them do it anyway. But I've always wondered, when you get sellers like that, and you know, let's say you have a buyer, let's say, you know, Oliver comes up and says, hey, I'm out to get this property. What's up? And you got to talk to the seller, and the seller's like, hey, you know, I want $25 million for this property. You know, the property is only worth maybe 20, 22, something like that. How do you, as the broker, approach that and deal with that?
Yeah. I mean, a great question. And that's, man, that's the bane of the broker's existence, right?
Right.
Is that a lot of, I mean, the majority of sellers want more than their property is worth, right?
Right.
And so I think that first of all, way that you approach that is in how you, if you're meeting with someone for a listing appointment, it's about how you deliver your presentation. And a lot of times agents and brokers are just coming and they're presenting, right? Hey, and then getting to here's the comps and here's the price without understanding the story about, you know, why the seller is wanting to sell. Every seller has a motivation.
Got it.
Right. And I think that when we can, whatever our price that we suggest ends up being, we can get to that point better if we can understand the seller, understand the property, and understand the story behind why the seller wants to sell. Then we can tie that in to the comps, the price points of the financials that we've been able to determine the price range that we feel that the property will get sold on, right? It's just hard to do that when you're talking to somebody and you're just presenting without listening, and then this person wants $1 million more than you're willing to give them or willing to sell it for.
Right.
Then it becomes like a argument style negotiation, right?
Yeah.
And a lot of agents are like, well, look, let me just get this listing and then we can work them down on price. In fact, in some of the bigger brokerages, Marcus & Millichap, probably the biggest one that does this, they will just get the listing listed at a ridiculous price, knowing that they're going to work the seller down, and then they've got a big enough network to market the property to where it will get sold. You know what I mean? That's if you're a big brokerage,
you can do that,
and you're selling large volume,
right?
You know, that could work. If you're an independent broker, that you need this property to sell for you to stay in business or for you to earn a living. That ain't gonna work, man. And I just think it sets up a bad situation that you're gonna have to come back in and retrade the price of the listing, or you're gonna have to field a bunch of seriously low offers. And so it creates a tough situation, man. And I just think that in my kind of personal philosophy over the years is I don't wanna take a listing to where I know it's not gonna sell at that price. You know?
Got it.
Now, I've done it. You know, it's something that we have to wrestle against every day now, right? But I've recently, a few people told me, look, I'm not going to be able to sell that property at that price. We only make money when the property trades. So I don't think it's going to trade at that. I'm just being honest with you, right? And that's kind of the guidance I've given. However, right?
Okay, right.
Also, there is sometimes where the property is slightly over where you think it will sell. And if that person seems reasonable, then that, I think that's an instance where we can work together and work to get to that price. But if it's unreasonable, then not only are we going to waste our time, but we're going to damage a relationship with the seller by not being upfront with them, because they're going to think that we can get this thing done for them, and they're going to put their faith in us. And when it doesn't happen, instead of them looking and saying, oh, the market, you know, is not there, they're going to say that agent, that broker, they couldn't get the job done.
Got it. Right. Which sets a bad precedence going down the road.
Yeah, man. And then another on the flip side of it, as we move into a buyer's market, right? Which I don't know if we're 100% there, but I feel like we're moving there for sure.
Right.
Where the buyers have more leverage in the negotiation. You also, if you're listing properties ridiculously, then buyers are not going to take you serious, man. And we're moving into the point where you want to have a solid, stable book of business who are buyers, active buyers,
right?
Active investors, you know, that are making deals happen. So if you're coming at them and you are not, and your prices are way above reality, then they're going to think, well, this is just a person who's getting a listing just to have a listing. They're not someone who's really trying to, you know, look after my interest and get me into a good investment. So you have to, you know, when you're a listing agent, you're a buyer's agent, you got to blend that. But you got to look, at the end of the day, we in the game got to be more realistic to the real price points. And that does everybody justice. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean. Here, so let me ask you this too. Then, you have done both. Like, you clearly got a deep understanding of the market, particularly your market, as well as the market overall, right? And I've seen on your YouTube videos, you're very detailed and you're very direct in what you're getting. You get to the meat and potatoes, and you're out, which is awesome for somebody to watch as a viewer. For you, as someone who is both an investor and as a broker, you've been an investor, you've been a broker, you've been an agent. Does the abilities transfer as an investor to agent to broker, or is it as like an investor, it's a waste of time to be a real estate agent? It's just better you just keep going. What's your opinions on that?
Nah, man, and that's an amazing question, because look, at the end of the day, we all want to be full-time investors. Well, I wouldn't say all, but I mean, it's a great aspiration to be a full-time investor. I got into the business first in the investment game. And then I morphed into sales in 06 when it was just easy money. You know what I mean?
Right.
It was easy money.
Right. Sell itself.
You know what
Got
I mean?
It. Yeah.
It was easy money. What I found in 2009, though, when I started my brokerage, was that I wanted to learn how to build a company, you know?
Okay.
And we're all entrepreneurs. If you're an agent for a broker, you're kind of an entrepreneur because you're under that brokerage, but you're an entrepreneur for sure.
Right.
If you run a brokerage, you're definitely an entrepreneur. And if you're an investor, you're definitely an entrepreneur, right? But building a company is another level of entrepreneurship. It's like the next level. It's like the next step. You know what I mean? It's one thing to be an entrepreneur. We go out, we eat what we kill, we make, have a vision, we bring it to life. We use capital and people and resources to make that vision come alive, right?
Right.
But then building a company where the company itself, you know, is doing deals. The company itself is bringing in revenue. The company itself is building value. The company itself has equity and value, right?
Right.
Is what attracted me to building a brokerage, right?
Got it.
And it's no easy task, by the way. No easy task, man.
I believe it.
I will say this, though. All the skills are intertwined, right?
Okay.
First of all, being an agent, it's hard to be a broker if you don't know what it's like to be an agent, right? I mean, I guess it can be done, but you know, you need to know what, as an agent, what it requires, right? And a lot of us, and I'm still a producing broker, right? Which is, you know, I've given myself 5 years from this January to the point where I'm not going to be a producing broker anymore. I'm going to be a CEO broker.
Nice.
And what I mean by that, what I simply mean by that is that we are going to be to the point where we're building, I'm going to be building and expanding the company, not listing and selling. And a big part of that then means that I'm primarily will be out investing into deals, right? So we corporately do syndications as a brokerage. And that's something I think a lot of brokers, a lot of investors do syndications like individually. Like, hey, I'm a person, I'm gonna do syndications, put investors together.
Right.
What we're doing is, as a company, saying, hey, this is what we're doing corporately. And this is our big, you know, what's called a growth opportunity, how we're gonna grow, how we're gonna expand the company, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it is like a company like a Goldman Sachs, let's just say, they're in the finance industry. They started out being an investment banker, and they are the largest or one of the largest investment bankers, right?
Right.
But their business is vast. They do, you know, they do trading. They do different types of finance. They have different arms of what they do, right? And all of those skills are intertwined. And I think if you're going to be a real good investor, you have to understand the brokerage world, because you should be, in one way or another, working with brokers. You know, the most successful investors I know kind of have a stable of their favorite brokers to bring them deals, number one, but also to sell their properties, number two. And then maybe number three, more importantly, to advise them, you know? Doing deals is a lot of work. And
yes, it is.
The investors that are set up, they got extensive teams, and not you know, there's different levels, right? Like institutional investors,
right?
Big companies, right?
Right.
They have internal teams on salary and payroll and all this, but they still work with brokers, right?
Yep.
But most individual investors, even if you got 10 units or you got 10,000 units, may not be institutional. You got to have a team. And a big part of your team, from I don't know not one commercial apartment investor that doesn't have a stable of brokers, at least a couple, three that they prefer. I know many that have. Now, some of them have too many brokers, right? They're just like, hey,
right.
Just bring me a deal.
Right.
And
right.
So there's a lack of loyalty. But the best, they have a crew, and they're pretty, they stick with them. So I think that as an investor, knowing, and the best thing we as brokers and agents do is hunt down deals. You know what I mean? We hunt down deals. Every deal that is before it hits the market, it was an off-market deal, every single one of them.
Absolutely.
And you know what I mean? That's what we do. What do investors want? Well, they want off-market deals. Right. So investors hunt for deals as well. But most probably, I would venture to say, now residential can be different. But if we're talking multifamily commercial, most of the off-market deals are going to be brought to you by brokers. And most brokers have a stable of off-market deals where they've been talking to sellers and the seller says, hey, look, I'm not going to list my property. But you bring me a buyer, then we can do some business, right?
Right.
And
right.
I hate to hear that. We hear it all the time, you know. And so that's just part of it. And then if I talk to a buyer and says, hey, look, we're in exchange. These are our requirements. And then I know their requirements. And then I know what's out there in the marketplace. Then I can bring those two together. I bring value to both parties, and we get a nice fee for it,
right.
You know. And that skill set transfers directly into investing, right? And like, you know, a good part of the deals that I've done, probably all of the deals I've done, I mean, not all of them, but have came through my brokerage one way or another. Right. So like, okay, we find a deal, we do a lot of marketing, we see something, and we may think, okay, well, this might be a good acquisition, and we can go after it. Or one of the agents comes in, and that's really what I'm trying to get to, is having my agents come in and say, hey, Steve, this is a good looking deal. This is one you should buy, or this is one you should do. Or your group of investors, you have a buyer for this, right? And so a lot of the deals, we list properties and sell them as well, but a lot of the deals that our investors or we acquire comes through our process of finding deals, right? And I said, okay. I think you have to cast a wide net. I think real professional investors, they are also looking for deals on their own, but also engage brokers. Now, I get, there's a couple companies here in California that are funds, and they're acquisitions managers or, you know, heads of acquisition. They reach out to me, and I'm sure all the other brokers that are doing something on a regular basis, say, hey, you know, this is what we're looking for. I got an exchange, or this is what we're looking for in your area. You find something off or on market, you can represent us. We just need a deal, right? And so I think that when you asked about the answer, it's a long-winded way of answering your question, but the skills intertwine directly.
Yeah.
And also, I think for agents and brokers listening, because most of us, if you don't aspire to own property, you should, because it's like if you're a Cadillac salesman and you're driving a Honda, you know what I mean? And it's nothing wrong with Hondas.
Yeah, that just looks wild. It just looks weird.
And there's nothing wrong with a Honda. But you're over here telling people about the benefits and amazing of the Cadillac world and the brand. And it's so awesome. But you pull it off in a Honda. You're not eating your own cooking. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And so like, so many agents, man, who haven't built up an investment portfolio. I know a bunch of agents who are investing in stocks. I was like, hey, nothing wrong with the stock market. You should invest. We all should, to an extent. But it's like, how you selling real estate every day, right? But you're not owning it, right? And so especially if you're selling investment property, when you own it, you can have a different conversation with your clients because you're one of them. Maybe you're on a lower, you have less units than them maybe. Or maybe you have more. But you can give them guidance from experience and not just from, you know, education. Although, if you don't have properties, don't let that stop you from working with investors. But what you should have is an ambition, a drive, to get to that point. And I think so therefore, I think the skills are interrelated. And there was in the single family world, there's a big, for an investor single family world, it was a big kind of, and I don't hear this so much now, but early on in my career, the 2000s, a lot of people would say, well, don't get your license, man, because once you get your license and you're sitting down with sellers, you got to disclose stuff and you got to be honest and all this kind of stuff because you have a license. You can't defraud people, you know. But I'm like, I don't think, look, if I'm doing deals, I don't want to be dishonest with people. I don't want to, put the wool over their head, so to speak. I'm not trying to bamboozle nobody. I'm trying to get a good deal as an investor. And it's not, and so what I've, and I had when I got going, an old broker tell me, look, a bunch of people say, don't get your license. That's hogwash. Get your license. And you can tell people, you can explain to people what you're doing. And if you're trying to buy something, you're trying to buy something at a discount, you just tell them, hey, you know, we can get the done a deal done if it's a cash deal or whatever at this X amount price. Hey, we can list it. It would take a lot longer. You may get more, but you're gonna have to pay more fees. You're gonna have to go through this. And if you and he was saying, you give people the option and you tell it to them straight, 9 times out of 10, they're gonna want to do the deal directly with you anyway. Yeah. And if you structure it right, you can even get a commission out of it. So
and that's what I was gonna say too, Steve. That's what I was gonna say, and I didn't mean to cut you off, but even when you do that, you're getting paid either way. You're gonna get a W out of that, right? If they sell, you're gonna get a win either at the price that you want higher over a longer period of time, or I'm gonna get the cash price, because either way, as the agent or as the investor, you're gonna get something out of it. So it always seems interesting to me that sellers will give people a hard time when you literally have brought them in to help you sell a property. You didn't say, hey, I want to sell it at 10 years from now. You want to say, hey, I want to sell it as soon as possible or within the next 3 or 4 months. So if that's the case, and the person you call in says, hey, this is how it is, this is what I'm looking at, it's mind-blowing to me when they're like, no, I don't want to do it that way, or I don't agree. You know, and you're like, okay, cool, but this is what it is, you know?
Yeah. I mean, and that's a great point, man, because it's like, it just, you know, I just think that if we're honest with people and we shoot straight, that it's going to work out. And if it doesn't work out the way you want it to, if you lose a deal for being honest, I guarantee you're going to make one up. You know what I mean? If you're like, hey, look, I'm trying to, you know, this is the comps and this is what you could get, and they end up, you know, not wanting to do a deal with you or not listing with you, right? They go somewhere else, but you kept it real, you know? I just think that it's going to come back to you in another deal, you know? It's kind of like, I just live by the principle, you reap what you sow. So you sow these seeds. And I know people who don't live by that and do probably a lot more deals than me. But that, like, for instance, for you, your listeners, me, my listeners, people I'm speaking to or whatever, I'm going to always advocate for shooting straight, being a stand-up person. Things are going to work out sometimes. Things are not going to work out sometimes.
Right.
But I think if you roll like that, more often than not, that it's going to work in your favor, especially if you're a real estate investor. You know what I'm saying? Yep, because, you know, there's not a lot of people, or an agent, broker. It's most people is not rolling like that, man. And when you do that, it stands out. Somebody is going to appreciate that. They're going to break some bread with you, man.
That's an absolute fact. Let's go back a little bit. Earlier, and this is something that I'm learning, so you're going to be teaching me a little bit as we talk about this. You mentioned that the best investors that you know, the bigger ones, not just the bigger ones, but the ones who are doing well, always have a stable of brokers. As an investor working to figure it out, you know, they're out here working and building their team. What's the process in getting a hold of a broker? And then on that note, we'll approach how do you know it's a good or bad after that. But for now, let's answer the question, or can you answer the question, how do you go about finding brokers and being able to work with them?
Well, excellent question, man. And there's a few different ways, right?
Okay.
Now, the tried and true method is looking at listings.
Okay.
And when you look up listings that represent what you're looking for.
Right.
Right. So you look for apartment buildings and you pull up LoopNet or CoStar or Craigslist, whatever, in your market, and you see somebody, they've got a couple listings. Or you want to reach out to those people. You generally want to talk to people who are active, right?
Right.
But then, so when you talk to them, it's about relationships. Some people are more transactional. I think from an investor standpoint, you definitely want people that are more relational. You know, in a sense of if you're working with someone long term, because they're going to think about you first when they find a deal. And they're going to be looking out for you because they know, hey, if I not only find you a great deal, but if this person makes money, they're going to use me over and over again, right?
So
you want to find some.
Before you continue, go into a little bit of what that conversation sounds like versus the transactional. So people understand the true depth of what you're saying.
Yeah, no, and thank you for asking that, because that, I think that's, you hear this, transactional brokers, people. Okay, so a transactional broker, when you call them about their listing, they're just going to talk about their listing, and they're going to pre-qualify you for their listing. Okay. Oh, what are you looking for? You like this? You got, you know, you got capital for this, and to come and see this property, whatever, you know what I mean? And then, let's say you go see the property. Let's see you, you know, work with them, or even write an offer, do a deal with them. It's always going to be about that deal or the next deal. Okay. Now, this can be, I don't want to say confusing for investors, but it can be kind of misleading, because the difference between that, the transaction, the deal, and the relational person or broker, is someone wanting to build a relationship with you is going to ask you questions about you and what you are trying to accomplish.
Got it.
What your rate of returns requirements are, what your cost of capital is, right? What your long-term and short-term goals are, right? And what are you looking to get from this whole real estate investing business, right? And when you encounter people that either ask you those questions directly, inquire, and or follow up with you in a way where they're looking out, they're looking to figure out what your interests are, right? Then when you do that, you can serve someone's interest. When I know, hey, I want, because I'll ask investors all the time, well, what's an ideal investment property look like? That's kind of my, one of my go-to questions I ask, right? And when someone, I had this happen yesterday, somebody said, I just want to make as much money as I possibly can. And I told the guy, well, thank you for saying that. Everybody says that. What does that mean for you? What does that look like?
Right.
Right? Because I want to make as much money as I possibly can. Everybody wants to make as much money as we possibly can. You know what I mean?
Right.
Value-added deals, you're looking for stable deals, you're looking for B2C property, you're looking for apartments, you're looking for, you know, industry, or you're looking for specific types of value-added properties where, like, for in my market, you're trying to come buy tenants out, or you're looking for a type of properties where you can add additional units to it. Mm-hmm. You know, are you looking for a property that you can add the use? I just rattled off the top of my head like 8 to 10 questions, right? That are that would direct me differently on based on what you're trying to do. So I'm trying to make money as much as I can. I have no context for you. All I'm going to do is just send you a deal. I have no idea whether you're going to like that deal or whether you're not going to like that deal. Right now, most investors, to their defense, like, yeah, everybody wants to make as much money as you can. So I mean, in a way, that's better than saying I don't know, right?
Right.
But if we work together on something, it's going to force somebody to sit down and really crystallize what they want. Because I'm going to ask those questions. I'm going to be persistent about it. Right. I do have some clients, though, that'll tell me, right? There's this one institutional deal. I haven't done a deal with them, right? But I will send them deals, only deals that he's mapped out. But they're very specific with their criteria, right? So I'm not sending them deals every week. I'm sending them only deals that, based on his criteria, based on what they want, based on our relationship to this point, he has expressed to me that he wants, right? Every single time I send it to him, I learn something else because he tells me, no, I don't like it because of boom, boom, boom. So that is helpful. Even though we haven't closed the deal, I know we are building a relationship because I know what he wants. I know I have a real good idea of what he don't want, right? You know what I mean?
Right.
And as we move further down that line, we get closer to what he wants. Now, so a transactional person or company is going to just deal you. I got this deal. I got that deal. I got this deal. It doesn't matter if that deal fits your criteria or not. And I think this is dangerous, especially when you're doing a 1031 exchange. Right.
Okay.
Because what happens is you need to buy a property, right? Or you're going to pay a bunch of money in taxes. When you sell a building, I'm doing an exchange. So a big brokerage house, I'll go back to Marcus and Millichap because they're not no shade against them, but you know, they're the big guys of the industry. They will list your property, no problem. They'll get it sold, no problem. And they're probably going to get you into a deal. They're just turn and burn, man. You know, they're getting you into a deal versus really understanding, first of all, the asset that they're selling.
Right.
And when you do an exchange, you should be acquiring a better asset, not just deferring taxes. The deferral of taxes, in my opinion, is the icing on the cake. You know what I mean?
Right.
So yeah, it's buying a better asset. Now, what does that mean? Okay, it can mean more cash flow, better location, you know, better building class, better, you know, a newer building, you know, newer market, whatever. Whatever that means to you. But if the broker hasn't taken the time to figure out that investor's reasoning for selling, then they're not going to be able to figure out the better asset. They're just going to slam a deal down their throat because they don't want to pay taxes, and they know that, right? And they got them.
Right.
And they know, look, we're just going to send them a bunch of deals, and then, you know, time's going to get short. They're going to have to make a choice. We're going to turn and burn. So when I say transactional brokers, what I mean is turn and burn. Now, let me just say this as well. There's a bunch of people in my market that sell a bunch of properties that also, you know, are relational. You know what I mean? So just because you are like a relational or relationship driven brokerage doesn't mean you can't do a bunch of deals. There's a company called the Case Group, and they do. And in fact, they're nationwide, but they're based here in the Bay Area, and they do single tenant triple net. You know what I mean? I mean, that is their idea. They are the kings of single tenant triple net brokerage, at least in California. And most of the stuff they sell is throughout the country. But I mean, they just dominate, man. You know what I mean? I'm talking about like hundreds of transactions a year. And if they didn't do $1 billion last year in sales, I would be surprised.
Right.
But they're relationship driven. They have relationships with all the top buyers and sellers of these single tenant type properties. Now they blend that with their machine in terms of their company and their operations. So they're, to my knowledge, they're not under like a big corporate brokerage. Believe they own their own shop and they're independent. Now, I could be wrong about that, but I'm pretty sure because when I see all their marketing, I don't see a brand, you know, I see their company, the Case Group.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned that though, Steve, because like my next question to you was going to be, hey, does it matter? Like, are we looking for places that aren't as big? Because the bigger companies, you know, just like any big company, the larger the production gets, not necessarily the less the quality, but the different the process has to be. And it makes sense. But to hear that there's another company out there that's doing it and still has those relationships is absolutely impressive.
Yep. It is. And I admire, you know, it's competitive, right? In the brokerage
absolutely.
World. It's competitive everywhere. We got the Super Bowl coming up, right? You know what I mean? Football.
Yes, we do.
Football guy. It's basketball season. Whatever sport you're into in America, it's competitive. Everything's competitive. School's competitive. Brokerage is no exception.
No
right?
different, right?
So, and investors and developers even more competitive. if we're honest, right? So this is what we all do. So, but you know, for me, I like to study what's going on, and I can appreciate people like the Case Group. Because they are consistent and they're beating the big boys, you know, at their own game. And they're doing it in a way where they have a good name, they have a good brand, they are delivering value for their customers. And for me, that gives me motivation. It says, hey, look, man, this can be done. Right? Now, they're single tenant triple net. Most of what I do. And look, man, and the cool part about it, you know how retail properties have taken a hit over the last few years, right? These dudes are, it's like none of it mattered to them. But I'm on their list. So I get an email about a deal they close every week. And I'm like, man, they just closed a KFC. They just closed a portfolio of Dollar Generals. They just closed a Walgreens. And I'm like, man, we're in this pandemic and they're doing all this stuff. So it just shows that you can be relational and still close a high volume of deals. Now, it's difficult. And I will say this. This is my challenge. As I am looking to scale, right, the more clients you get, the more, you know, deals that you're doing, and I would suggest for investors, probably the same thing. The more, especially if you syndicate, the more investors you have, or the more buildings, the more tenants you have, right, just it becomes more of a challenge to deliver the same quality of service
right
when you were smaller. You know what I mean? So that it requires everything of you to grow and expand. However, absolutely, it can be done. It's being done every day of the week. We can do it now. I really don't think you have to sacrifice your value system or building relationships with people just to turn and burn. You know what I mean?
Right.
It just may require better systems. It may require, you know, better lead conversion. It will definitely require a better team that you got, you know, but I think we can be transactions. So that's what I say for investors out there saying, how do I know which broker to work with? Well, first of all, you got to work with somebody who's got business, right? Because ain't gonna help you. And listings, you know, because you are looking to get to listings maybe before they hit the market. Now, a broker who's been in the business a while, they have relationships. You know, they're probably going to have two or three to five top clients.
Right.
When that deal comes, they're going to send it to those people first. Why is that? Because they closed with them before. They know they can perform. They like working with them, type of thing. So when you're new or you're new to that relationship, you know, you've got to kind of build it, you know, and
absolutely,
and let people know, especially what'll help you is closing a deal and doing what you say you want to do. Even if, look, the deal takes longer, the lenders, you know, right now, like we're all having challenges with lending, right? The lender, you know, maybe falls out the end, you got to go. But I've had deals, right, where the deal fell apart. But,
right. Yeah.
Either, you know, the client that I was working with was like, hey, man, I appreciate the way you handled that. Or even I had with other brokers, I had a deal. There's this guy, Phil, who's now one of my agents, but he was with another brokerage. And it was a grueling deal. And the seller, his client actually was underhanded and did some fraudulent stuff. We ended up in court and all this stuff, right?
Wow.
But when it was all said, what you're doing, you know what I mean? And, you know, that comes through just being a straight shooter and doing what you say you're going to do. Don't come to these investors and say, hey, I can do a $10 million deal, all cash. And then when they bring you one, right? And then you're like, oh, I have to call these other people and then I got to go raise the money and, you know, so on and so forth. You want to be upfront about what you are and what you can do. You want to be consistent. You want to show them that you're serious. And then you also want to have a couple of them that you work with. You know what I mean? Now, we all want the investors to only work with us. That would be great. That would be cool.
Right.
Yeah. Right, right. And that's just part of business. Now, I think that what I find more often is that.
Of course. I mean, I don't see nothing wrong with that. I get that.
Have one or two, maybe three, that they will list properties with. You know what I'm saying? But but investors will have multiple brokers to find them deals because, you know, one broker is not going to have all the deals. You know what I mean?
Okay.
And that's just facts, right? One broker ain't going to have. You could be the top 1.1 whatever percent of your marketplace. Somebody else is still going to have a deal you don't know about.
Of course not.
Right?
Yeah.
So that it makes sense to have. That's as an investor. You want to have make sense to have those relationships. And then those agents or brokers 100%. Can bring you deals. And it's like if you have a broker that you're working with on everything and then someone else brings you a deal. And, you can't, as a broker, you can't be mad about that. No, such and such brought them a deal. It was a hell of a deal. They did it. They made money. You can't be mad at that. You know what I mean? Now, I do know some people who will not do anything if it doesn't go through a particular broker. I have a couple clients like that, and I love them. If another broker brings them a deal, they're going to call me and say, Steve, what do you think? You know what I mean? And say, hey, they'll tell the broker, look, hey, I appreciate you bringing me this, but I need Steve to look out after me.
Interesting.
You know what I mean? And those are a dime and a dozen. I will tell you that much, you know. But for certain people like that, they want, you know, there's certain people that value advice and guidance. Now, you got to be at a level where you can give that. And that comes through some years of experience, man. You can't just come straight in the game and expect people to, I'm only working through him unless that's your auntie or your cousin or something or your mom's. But when you develop an expertise, then people will work with you. And I think there is something to be said as an investor to have someone like that. Because you're going to get hit up. Once you get out there and you get your name out there, you get to the brokers of the world, and every investor should be doing some kind of marketing for deals, right? just some kind of market. It's a business. You are running a business, by the way. As in real estate, that's what makes us a little bit some. You can passively invest in real estate. You can't do that. But if you're an active investor, you're running a business at the end of the day. So you should be marketing yourself in some way. But having someone that you can call and say, hey, man, what do you think about this deal?
Yeah.
Or what are your thoughts? And somebody who can actually analyze a deal and give you objective advice, oh, that's critical. You know, I had a client call me up and she's looking at a 12-unit condo portfolio. And she was like, she called the broker because she saw it. And then she called me up, hey, I want you to follow up with this guy. Let's look at the numbers. I like this neighborhood. I think we can do it. Mm-hmm. All right. I got the package back from the broker. It's funny, we text each other almost at the same time with the same thing. Just basically the numbers was all bad, man. You know what I mean? And she knows I'm a teller that. I could have said that, hey, it's a $2 million deal. Let's just get it done. You know, you can make it.
Right.
But and I can't do that. I've closed down transactions with her before. Right. This is just one of my, you know, A-list buyers and sellers. When she come sell something, she's going to call me.
Right.
So when she calls, think about that, investors that's listening. Having somebody that is going to have your back like that is worth its weight in gold, especially because we, unlike an attorney or some other professional consultant, we don't get paid to a deal closes. You don't have to pay us some $10,000 retainer to get quality advice. You know, in fact, like on that deal, I'm not going to make anything on that deal because we're not doing that. But I know I value the relationship, so I can easily text her and say, wow, these numbers are not good. It's a negative cash flow without a mortgage. We looked at and so all of y'all listening, right? I don't care if you buy houses all day long or you buy hotels or sophisticated leveraged buyouts of companies. We can all look at a profit and loss statement, right? And some are more complicated than others, but we can look and see if it's a negative on the net income numbers, right? And okay, all right, well, that's the problem. Now, well, let's go dive into it, right? And when you look at the numbers, a lot of times people will send you a profit and loss statement where they have the mortgage payment in the expenses, and you have to look out. So that's the first thing
right,
I see,
right? Because
property management softwares are kind of like that. So we're looking at net income thinking that, okay, that's what I use to pay my mortgage, mm-hmm. with, right? Or NOI. But a lot of time the mortgage payment will be in the expenses. Just, you know, that's a lot of how a lot of systems are. We know that the debt service is not an operating expense, right? We looked at a set of numbers where I saw a negative net operating income. I was like, all right, well, let's take the mortgage payments out. Maybe they're paying hard money. Maybe they're paying high rate. When I looked and I saw, well, there's no mortgage payment calculated in these expenses, then they are losing money before they pay a mortgage. Man, that is a red flag with a captain, pirate symbol on it.
You know? Right. That's a flag. That's an immediate flag.
You know, that's like them pirates in the ocean trying to take over the fuel tankers. You know what I'm saying?
Not the pirate skull.
Saying all that, not to belabor it, but you want to have a team of brokers that you can trust and that have deals and that are looking to develop a relationship with you. You know what I mean? And, you know, the other people in your team, of course, as well, you know, accountants, mm-hmm. insurance people, attorneys, we attorneys is like, can't live with them, can't live without them type of thing. You know what I mean?
Of course.
You got to have them on there. You know what I mean? Title. Look, let me just tell you, title and escrow is also very, very important.
Yeah, I know every
state. Now, which state are you in?
Sure. So I'm currently in Baltimore, or not, Baltimore's not a state. Lord, forgive me. Anybody, stop laughing. I know you're laughing and listening. Shut up. I'm in Maryland. I was going to say Baltimore, Maryland. Don't you judge me. I hear you judging
me. You're a Ravens
fan. But yeah, no, absolutely not. I am a Carolina Panthers fan, and it has been tragic for me for a little while now, since 95.
Oh, man. We were struggling. I had a couple years when Cam was on top, you know what I'm saying,
Yes. Well, even then, like, we get to the Super Bowl, we take the L in the Super Bowl. I'm don't get me wrong, I'm greatly appreciative that I got the Super Bowl, but I'm not going to lie to you, as a younger franchise, I wanted the W. 100% I wanted a W. And that's just, you know, just me. But don't get me started about the Panthers. Man, this will turn into a football podcast quick.
Man, you can definitely talk ball, man. That'll be the next one.
Bet. Say no more. Say less.
All right. So, Steve, man, that's what's interesting is what you said. I have a couple proof of cases, and just to back up what you said, and for those who are listening and watching, I got a couple friends. One by the name of Vadim. He is out of, he works for a company called Fairwinds Capital out of the Norfolk, Virginia, Hampton Roads area. And Vadim has done amazing things within a year time span of him really dedicating himself to the game of multifamily real estate. And one of his biggest things, he and I talk, we go back and forth, and he'll tell me, man, the most important things is relationships. He has had more deals come across the board from somebody he talked to 3 months ago, 4 months ago, who he had a positive interaction with, and that deal comes across. So I say that to say to those of you listening and watching, whenever you are out here looking at brokers, understand, even if the broker cusses you out on the phone, fusses you out on the phone, just remember the relationship is something you need to be after. So don't be that guy. Don't be that gal. Work with them as much as possible. If they go to left road, okay, got it. You ain't going to work with them again. But I can tell you right now, the multifamily world is small. So the guys who screw you over, screw somebody over, that gets over to the next person. So yeah. So with that said, Steve, and you got a lot of things going on. So I know how busy you are. It took us forever to get us both on here at the same time. So with that said, I don't want to waste your time. I definitely, we're going to have to get back on and do this again. But in the meantime, we're going to do, let's hop straight into the two sections, our two sections. First one, Steve, as you know, is the, what do we call it? I'm blanking. Hold on. Wait. Troop to task. That's what we call it. We call it the troop to task. All right. So we're doing the troop to task. What the troop to task is, for those who are listening and watching, is Steve's going to give you one thing you can do right now in your life to help you push yourself to the next level in your real estate career. And with that said, Steve, the floor is yours.
One thing you got to do right now to push forward your career in the real estate investing world is you need to track and measure your incoming lead flow, right? Mm-hmm. Track and measure your incoming lead flow. What I mean by that, how are you sourcing deals, right? And you should, by the way, have multiple ways, whatever that is, right? Whether it's direct mail, cold calls, driving for dollars, working with brokers, pulling up properties. You need to track and measure, first of all, how many leads you're getting on a weekly basis, mm-hmm. You know, where those leads came from, right? And then you need to have a system to track those leads, the contact, when the follow-up, the appointments, right? And when I say a system, some sort of, you know, software program, I mean, I guess you could use, you know, old school pads like we used to, but there's so many CRMs for investors. I use Podio, but there's so many systems out there that you can use to track and measure your incoming lead flow, right? And you should have a goal of how many leads you're going to get every single week. You know, and incoming property leads, if you're raising capital, incoming investor leads, whatever. Leads, you need to have them, right? You are running a business, and so you need to track and measure them, where you're getting them from, you know, what they are, and what the next steps of follow-up are on that lead. And then that'll increase your business for sure.
I love it. That's excellent advice.